Spark Studios, Session 1, Episode 6. Of course, we got the Daft Punk playing in the background because, man, they broke up. I can't believe it. After 27 years of being together. Just got to listen to this. We're starting with the year 2013, which is when this album came out. Again, I want to introduce my guest, the lovely, very creative, very uber talented, and my first female guest, Heather. Welcome.
Hi, Mark. It's really great to be here.
I'm so glad you're here with me. We got the candles going and we've got your special lights.
Yep. So this one's called Phyllis.
Phyllis.
Yeah.
You're kidding me.
No, it's Phyllis. Doesn't it kind of look like Phyllis Diller's hair?
I love it. The serendipity never fails me. Chris Hansen's going to laugh himself silly. So when I was in college, my best friend who was my guest on episode 3, when we would talk to each other, I still do random abstract names of just other drivers or whatever. But when we would come in, it was during the Jerry Maguire era. Okay. And it was like, I would say Jerry and he'd say Phyllis. He would call me Phyllis. Oh, so Phyllis is one of my nicknames. That's perfect.
And I will tell you, 13 is my favorite number. So
2013. Well, there you go. So what we're going to talk about is what happened in 2013. Got to set the stage a little bit because 2012, as you know, picking up from episode 5, after Los Locos, I went back to DJing, met Mike Hongslow in episode 5. We were talking about that. I got into DJing. But then in the fall of 2012, I decided for my day job, which I didn't really have one at that time, I'm going to network in downtown St. Paul. So what I did was I just started walking in the skyways and I stumbled upon a couple of different fellows, one of which is now my chiropractor. His name is Michael. And he had this thing. He just opened a chiropractic practice.
Is it Cairo Way?
Cairo Way. And then I also met a guy named Jonathan who had a thing called St. Paul Media. And we became fast friends, just going to the Capitol River Council meetings. And we just had this vision to spark energy in downtown St. Paul. What we did was we started this thing called Go St. Paul. How can we get public art, music, fun things to do? Because it's just this cool space. Again, 2013. We won't want to talk about 2021, what it's like now. But anyways, then it was incredibly energetic.
Yeah, and light rail was coming.
Light rail was coming. We were on the other side. We were previous to before the train was going to come through there. And so long story short, we got this idea, let's do art. And then one day, summer 2013, we got this idea, hey, you know what we should do? There's this wall and it's 150 feet long of white sheetrock. And it was like, we need something on this wall. How about we get a muralist? This was like some Tuesday. The next day, I get this message from Jonathan. He's like, dude, you're not going to believe this. This guy walks in and goes, I'm a muralist. Could you help me find that? I'm like, what? And he's from Nigeria, I think. And so he's like, dude, so let's talk to the building manager. Yeah. Can we get him buckets of paint? Let's do this. Commission this bad boy to do it. So this is middle of the day. We got the drop cloth, the whole deal. He comes and starts muraling this 50, 60 foot wide deal that got people to stop. Do you remember that?
Yeah. Was that at Atama Way?
Yes. Yep. And I didn't know him from Adam, but boy, he got some really crazy reactions because he's not, you know.
It was performance art too.
Right.
I mean, I didn't see him paint the mural, but I knew him after that, so.
Right. Because we really hadn't met during that exact time. You were around, yeah. But we hadn't met yet. So that happens. And of course, like I said, it was kind of felt compared to what they're used to seeing, because a lot of art in St. Paul is pretty...
It was abstract.
It was so abstract and jarring that he sometimes couldn't paint because it was so different. But that's what good art does. It makes you stop and think about what the heck is this thing? And so that got a lot of people mad, which then the manager heard about, you know, the property manager. And so she came to me and said, we got to do something. We got to take this down. And so he did finish it, thankfully. We put it together. I think it was on 3 or 4 sheets of sheetrock. We pulled it down because, of course, there's this construction construction happening behind it because it used to be a bank and they were going to make them into all these spaces. So we're like, oh, that's cool. So they were like,
some woman's
Sean,
name.
Sean Whiskey, Sean.
Sean, how Sean, can you forget that?
Sean, huge props to Sean. I'll find a way to get you this show because I like to give honor where honor is due. You did some incredible work to give us the chance to have Adi Tomiwa do that first mural. But then she's like, we got to do something else. She found this thing. It's called Before I Die. Could we do this instead? And I was like, sounds good. Let's do it. And I had been networking with the performance school down there, St. Paul Conservatory. And I said, well, maybe I get one of these kids to come and like play music to kind of unveil this thing before I die. Do you remember the Before I Die?
Yeah. I mean, I have a story about that. So.
Okay, you go ahead.
Well, I walked in. That was really close to when I first started working down there. And I saw that empty mural and I go, nobody is going to write on that. This is Minnesota. No one will pick up a piece of chalk and write something in public.
So
next day, it was full.
It literally was three, I don't even think it was 3 hours. We had covered it up and kind of veiled it in mystery. What it is it's this huge black chalkboard paint. And then before I die, I want to blank. And then there's chalk for people to just voluntarily. I think it was started in New Orleans, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, it was some trend that was going through. I looked at it and I go, Minnesotans are never going to do that.
And it was absolutely full. And it wasn't just people saying, I just want to jump off a bridge or, you know, it was.
Go to Disneyland.
There was some really deep thought in it.
Yeah. I mean, how many lines were there?
Like, I think there's 60 or 80 lines.
Oh, it seemed like there was more than that. But it was a huge wall. And I was just astounded.
Yeah, it was incredible.
But I still didn't know that was you. I hadn't met you yet.
So I'm in the middle of that. And I remember that day. I think we had to race, you know, we raced it 2-3 times. But there was one point where I just pondered it because good art, and especially public art, again, makes you think about what is what. So I'm sitting there looking at it. Right to my mind drops this concept. Before I die, I want to glimpse what is what I wrote in there. And I have the picture. I just want to glimpse what is. So I wrote that in, and then I sat on it for a while, and you know, it sat there. And then I just got this like idea because I knew what was going to be happening behind it. They were going to take that wall down eventually once the construction was done, and there was these empty spaces. I remember when they took it down, and I was like, I just have this sense about what if there's a way to take a photo art gallery and combine it with a place to gather. And so it actually evolved. This is what's so exciting for me. It was so sequential, not sequential. It was just like day to day. I didn't know how it was going to be, but I saw this vision. Here's this space. It was deep. I didn't want to touch it. I just wanted to leave it. No floor.
Yeah, it was a blank box.
Blank box.
Glass front.
And I think it was the art crawl that first kind of birthed the pictures. And that's where I met Sarah. I met Chris June, who was one of the photographers, and then I had Drew Johnson also, and they all had this same kind of depth photography. So I got them involved, and then it must have been right about that time, my friend David Sunderborg, I was telling him about the idea, and he goes, oh, I'm meeting down there. I want to see it. I'm meeting with my friend Heather. I think you guys should meet. And I was like, sounds good. Cool. I don't know Heather from anything. Let's do it. And so I don't even remember. Pick up what you remember about that.
Yeah. Where did the chairs come in? When did the sky chairs come in?
Okay. So then, okay. Thank you. I almost skipped that part. Yeah, so the gathering part was, oh yeah, we went to, this is during the time in the fall when there is, it's called the Renaissance Festival. And I went to the Renaissance Festival and I saw these chairs. And of course we're in the Skyway. And I love this idea of doing these depth photographies where it'd be an art gallery. But then I go to this Renaissance Festival and I see these things and they're called sky chairs and they're like hammocks, but they're just different than hammocks. They're like more of chairs sitting and they've got a footrest. And I was like, how cool would that be if we could hang those things in the middle of this? And then basically, oh yeah. And then I was working this other job. This is where it ties together. I was working late night shifts, labeling filters that test air quality. Boring, boring, boring job. But I met this kid who had grown up for much of his life in China. And I was telling him about this. And I don't know why it came up, but this idea of when I told him about these sky chairs, he's like, this is a workday environment where you'd have this gallery. He's like, you know, in China, they do this thing called wushu. And I was like, what? Wushu? Wushu? What is that? He's like, well, it's a nap after lunch. It's a place that people can go and sleep. And I was like, I love this idea. This is really, really cool. I definitely got to do this. And it was like, it was all within this like little short period where the sky chairs come in and then he says about this wushu. And I was like, oh yeah, let's do it. And then it was like, okay, how do they take naps with lighting? And then that's when.
Yeah. So I'm doing lighting. I'm trying to find a place to hang stuff. And I'm come in there and I'm like, hi, I'm Heather. My lights need to be in here.
And I'm like, what are your lights? And I can't, I want to do almost like a video podcast for this one in particular, because her lights are so ridiculously incredible. And talk more about like the inspiration of what these lights are.
Yeah. So they're just made out of milk jug, water jug plastic. So that just translucent plastic. And then I cut them up into various shapes and then reconfigure them so they're very abstract, and when you put the lighting in there, it just glows, it illuminates, and it just completely transforms the material and everything like that. But and then you turn it on and it transforms a space. So like whenever I see a space that needs lighting or needs something, so I just like pretty much barged in there and basically, you know, running in there with, I mean, not the first time, but second, with like these things hanging from my hands, and you know, we're trying to figure out how to hang them without damaging the new
false ceiling and all that,
drop ceiling that they just put in. So yeah, so but having the chairs and the lights and the photography, it was the space. And the other thing about the space is that it's not like an eating space, like it's not where you sit down and eat, like in a,
no,
it's a place where you contemplate or you just veg out or whatever. So it was like a quiet sensory space.
Yes.
So, yeah.
Yeah. And again, this evolved and I don't even remember exactly the timing, but when you came in and brought the lights, it was like this missing piece.
It was a missing piece. It's always a missing piece.
Because I don't like, because I wanted to be an experience where what I saw was people need a place to rest in the day that they can come away from the treadmill of the Skyway and the work environment and just take a breath.
Yeah, and just shoveling their lunch into their face while they're running between spaces or whatever. Just a stopping space.
Exactly. And so anyways, it's amazing how it all came together. Then I can't remember, how did I come upon that locker? Because then this was the kind of the final thing was, I got this locker, this upside down green locker that just looked whack. And I was like, I want people to come in here, take a rest. And I did, then the music piece came into it. But then there was this locker. It's like, let's put away our cell phones and lock them and then take a rest. Okay, and that was that was kind of the final thing. And I didn't care about the money. I didn't care about anything. I just wanted people to be able to do this. And it just came together in such a crazy way. And that's what became Glimpse. And before I forget, I think I still have it in my wallet. I'm going to pull it out now because I saved this because this experience changed me so much.
Your card?
Yeah.
I almost brought mine. It's hanging up on my
I've got the card.
Magnetic board.
And I want to thank Dre Munseth for designing it. All I asked the universe was, I just want to glimpse what is. And I just came into it. Here's what Glimpse is. Glimpse is sacred space. Life is sacred. Without realizing it, our life gets taken away from us with the worries of the day. Our hope is that spending just a little time here, you'll feel a renewed sense of life, a renewed sense of who you are and why you are here on this earth. It was transformative for people. I just sort of like, again, we happen on it when you just dive into the earth. You just don't know what the universe is going to do. And that's what happened. All right, Heather, we're going to be excited for section two. All right, you ready?
Yeah, let's go.
We'll take a break here.